There was this hilarious video, and I wish I could find it. It's the funniest thing. It's this woman, and she's like, you know, I'm not really a feminist. I've just decided that, you know, the quickest way for me to get the remote control and watch what I want is just give him a fucking blowjob. Just be done with it. Just do it. It was the funniest freaking thing. It was so funny.
It's a handy tool, but...
Hey, Warners, welcome to another episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes business sexy again.
I'm Gina Tremarco, founder and owner of Pivot 10 Results and Carolina Improv Company.
I'm Rachel Pitts, mommy, wifey. I'm a mortgage loan officer with US Mortgage, and I have brought back to life the UltraFit Lifestyle. So check that out. My new website, theultrafitlifestyle.com. The result of a lot of introspection during the pandemic, I brought it back out of hibernation. So having fun with that.
Yes.
Having fun with that. And we're about to bring your sexuality out of hibernation if it's been a little dormant by talking to this guest today. She is,
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I have, a long time ago, I got over the fact of like, overdoing it when saying that I think a woman is beautiful. I just think Dana is so freaking beautiful. Her
gorgeous.
Hair.
The second I saw her, I was like, girl crush.
Oh my God. I have such a crush. Like maybe it's because I always secretly wished that I had afro like that because I would rock it.
Oh my God.
Like go look her up so you can have the visual. And I say it in the podcast because I just love looking at her. She's so amazing to look at.
She is so gorgeous physically. And then you get to talk to her and you're like, can she be my best friend too?
I think it's an inner glow though too. I think she's so in touch with, like when she talks about sweeping the energy out with the broom, I'm like,
my gosh,
I wish I could think about menial tasks like that. Like,
well,
I think
part of her inner glow is the orgasms.
Yep. We get into that a little bit, don't we?
Totally. We get into that a lot of it.
So we get on top of that.
We do. We get on top of it. We get under it. We
get behind it.
We straddle it. So this is your warning that this episode may be a little saucy.
No, it's not. It may not be. It is.
It is.
So, but I found Dana when Gina and I took over Meredith Campbell's Instagram page. And Dana had taken over Meredith's page the week before we did. And I just became fascinated with her. She founded the Booty Parlor in 2004. And her work has impacted the lives of thousands of women, inspiring their sexy self-confidence and helping them create more satisfying relationships. And Dana's inspiration for the Booty Parlor was born out of watching her mother, the talented makeup artist, make over her clients at the local beauty salon in Chicago. She fell in love with all things beauty and all things sexy. And she's got a couple books. Her first book, The Mojo Makeover, 4 Weeks to a Sexier You, was published in 2011. And it's a transformational 30-day program to help women of all age boost their confidence, sexiness, and satisfaction. And her recent follow-up, The Mommy Mojo Makeover, as an empowering digital workshop, ooh, might need that, designed to specifically to help all you moms out there. She has appeared on Good Morning America, The Insider, ABC Nightline, Access Hollywood Live, The Wendy Williams Show, and tons of other stuff. And she's been featured in Cosmopolitan, Marie Claire, Allure, Women's Health, US Weekly, Self, The Wall Street Journal, and all the things. And I don't think she needs any of those credentials at all because she is legit got it going on.
Yeah, without those credentials, she is thebomb.com. And let's just say, like, this is, she's so much about the mommy stuff and me not being a mommy. I just want you non-mommies to know that you will get a lot out of this episode, even if you are not a mom, because we all need to get the mojo back into our lives in some way. So I do ask questions around that for the non-moms.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you brought that up because I think like becoming a mother and having that big change in your life can be the same as you said in the episode, Gina, some other big change in your life. And everybody goes through changes or traumas or, you know, good changes, bad changes, career changes. And that can dry up your mojo just as easily as motherhood.
Yeah. I think about some of the things that happened way back when in my own marriage when things just went awry, you know, in our businesses that created challenge and change that really affected your sex lives. So no matter what trauma you've got going on or change, y'all need to listen to this episode. There were so many ahas for me. I wrote a lot of stuff down. I don't know. Probably my favorite is hashtag put some pleasure on it. That was probably my favorite, and harness your juiciness. That's all I'm going to share to give you a little teaser. I don't know if Rachel has anything else she wants to tease.
My mind is going so many different directions after that episode. I don't even know what to say. So I think you guys just go ahead and get on with it. Get on it. Get behind this episode with Dana Myers.
Dana, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About. I hope you have been warned about this show and the two of us.
This is my first official warning and I'm excited.
Ooh, Doug's smart. He didn't warn you. I love it. That's perfect. So we, I'm gonna let Rachel run with what we consider a woman your mother warned you about, or at least Rachel's definition of a woman your mother warned you about, because we want to know what your definition of that is for yourself. So Rachel, how would you define a woman your mother warned you about?
Wait a minute. I'm not supposed to answer this, but I would say it's a woman who is a go-getter, who is not afraid to say and do what she wants, and who is not afraid of what other people will say about her, and who also gets shit done and sometimes cries in the shower because it's necessary.
Or on the kitchen floor.
Yes, yes. Or in the closet, or wherever she finds herself.
Wherever you need to cry, we believe in it. We try to go against the status quo and be a beacon of light for other women, but we fuck up along the way.
Beware the perfect people.
Yeah. Love it.
What about you, Dana?
Well, that's really interesting because I feel like that's the woman my mother raised me to be. So it's interesting now. I think that, you know, I have a almost 7-year-old daughter, and that's the woman I want to raise her to be, is completely unapologetic, owning her body, owning her sensuality, owning her voice, you know, putting on her crown, standing in her power. And then, you know, lifting other women up along with her on the ride. You know, the women that I would warn her about are the women who, you know, don't stand in circle, right? Who don't support other women, who don't want to bring other women up, as they go up. So, but then it's like those women, they've got like a sister wound and they're really just hurting. You just need to dig a little deeper and give them a hug and welcome them into the circle and say, honey, it's okay. You know, you don't have to hate other women. It's okay.
I love that.
So many layers. There's so many layers to the feminine experience.
Okay. First of all, I just want to point out to our listeners, if you are listening right now, I want you to go to find Dana Myers and the Booty Parlor, just so you can see, so you can visualize this woman, because she's so, I think that was the first thing when I saw, I found Dana on Meredith Campbell's site when she took over Meredith Campbell's Instagram one day. And I was in love with just how, I mean, looks are not everything, but oh my God, Dana is gorgeous and her hair is bomb. So just go look her up right now so you can have a visual of this woman while you listen to her amazing message. Because I just thought,
so nice. That is so nice. And I will take that compliment. I feel like I do own my beauty, and I feel like I look beautiful because I feel beautiful on the inside. And I feel beautiful on the inside because I have a lot of orgasms and I treat myself really good, and I allow myself to feel the range of of my emotions. And I do feel like that's the key to external beauty as well. So thank you very much. And I'm honored and feel privileged to be sitting here virtually with all this amazing technology, connecting with you two beautiful women in your badass outfits with your badass hair and your gorgeous faces. So boom.
Let's go back to the orgasm.
I was just going to say that. I was just going to, and the moral of the story is if you don't listen to another part of this podcast, orgasms are the key.
Yes. Orgasms are the key.
They are.
Yes.
I think every time that I see people on social media, Facebook in particular, because like Instagram's a little safer. People don't rant on Instagram like they do on Facebook. If somebody is like, has this, like a long couple of paragraphs about masks, about, you know, the government, whatever, I'm like, you really could use an orgasm. It's just clear.
Yeah.
Well, orgasms are cleansing. They're healing. I really use them to process my emotions. You know, like you said, when we started, like she's not afraid to cry, right? In the shower. And it was like, I'm not afraid to cry when I have an orgasm because it is really like a purifying, cleansing.
It's a release.
It's a release. It's also energizing. It's, you know, I use orgasms to manifest. I use orgasms to, you know, to celebrate. So for me, it's like another mechanism. It's like an inbuilt mechanism for processing emotions, celebrating myself. And also, you know, like my favorite hashtag now is put some pleasure on it. Hashtag put some pleasure on it. And especially right now, look, motherhood is daunting. Building a career can feel daunting. Living in this weird time can feel really daunting. And so I'm constantly in this state of like asking myself, how can I put some pleasure on this situation? It doesn't have to be an orgasm, although 2 to 3 times a week, I highly recommend it is an orgasm. And look, it's 5 to 10 minutes with yourself. You know, having an orgasm in whatever way you need to. If you have more time, great. But it's also in the little things. Like, how can we put pleasure on wearing a mask? You know, how? So I like make up fantasies in my head. I'm like, I'm not putting on a mask. I'm putting on like my
superhero
costume. Like, this is what the queens wore in ancient Egypt. Like, I just make shit up. But it's using my sensual imagination to try and shift what feels like an uncomfortable experience into something that has pleasure in it. You can do it with the dishes. I do it when I'm sweeping the floor. Like, I imagine I'm moving negative energy out with the broom and clearing space for what I desire. And so suddenly, like the really menial task of sweeping my kitchen 8 times a day, I swear to God, I'm finding so much pleasure in it right now. And then I like ride the broom and I'm like, I'm a witch riding my broom. You know, I'm just making shit up as I go along, but it does make my life feel more feminine, more joyful, and more orgasmic, like in an overarching way.
I'm seeing this amazing opportunity for my company to, because you're making it up and that's what we do in improv. So improvise your way to an orgasm, improvise your way to put pleasure on it.
I am totally riding my broom here in a little bit, like a
I'm
witch.
I'm telling you, it's magical. So good.
But, so when you said about the mask, I just found the greatest website and my husband and I ordered these badass masks because, you know, the masks are not going anywhere anytime soon. And I am comfortable wearing a mask for my safety and the courtesy of others. So I was like, I'm gonna level up my mask. And my mask I just ordered is badass.
It's like a
superhero, like in the next generation, futuristic, like with lipstick on. And then my husband has like a samurai and we're like, we're just going to fucking rule the mask world. And ever since I posted a picture, people are like, we're going to get that mask. Like just turn it around.
What's the website on that? Cause you didn't send me the website. You sent me a picture though.
Oh, it's hold on. Let me look it up. But, while I'm looking that up, Dana, tell us about Booty Parlor, how that came about. Because I want to make sure we get to all these amazing things that our listeners can utilize to improve their lives.
Yeah. So I started my career in the music business. Oh, those masks are great. Oh, they're great.
So good.
Really cool. Very like futuristic superhero. Yeah, I get it.
Sorry about that. I had to show you.
So I started my career in the music business. you know, as a young woman, I was a really passionate young woman, a really curious young woman. My mom is a makeup artist. And so I would sort of tag along with her to the beauty shop. And I was just always surrounded by women having this exchange of girlfriend to girlfriend conversation and makeup and sex talk. And I would sort of just sit in the corner watching my mom and just got from the very start, like how important female empowerment is and the sisterhood. And at the same time, as I grew, I was very sexually curious. My parents saw it. And they knew that if they tried to like shut me down, that I would rebel even more. So they were incredibly smart in how they handled it, and how they talked to me and acknowledged me. Anyhow, so I just kind of caught the pleasure bug pretty early and felt compelled to share it with all my friends. And then when I was 17, I bought my first sex toy and I was like, oh my God, this is the best thing. I can now have orgasms so much faster. It's amazing. And wow, different, this flavor, that flavor. So I was always that girl that people were coming to for love and sex and beauty advice. So those are my two kind of core passions. But I was also a classical pianist, grew up performing, loved the stage, loved rock and roll, loved rocker guys, and so got in the music business probably.
I married two of them before the current, so
yeah. I just wanted to kiss rock and roll stars. So went into the music business, got into music licensing and working with big ad agencies, doing brand partnerships in the entertainment space. But really just saw an opportunity. This was 15 years ago when what we know now as the sexual wellness business was still very much the triple X business. And I thought, why is everything still so seedy and gross? There's this white space for me to do a brand, create a brand where I'd actually want to shop for sexy beauty products and toys and lingerie, things that would inspire my femininity and my sexuality. I had started dating a guy off of Match.com. We fell in love. I told him the idea. He's like, let's do it. We raised some money, quit our jobs, launched the brand with like so many products. Like big, like we just started making mistakes right from the start. But we got scouted by Victoria's Secret. They became our biggest client for 9 years. We were all over the place. And as from an entrepreneurial standpoint, you know, a lot of people say, oh, wow, like you've had a successful business for so long, but it really didn't happen overnight. I mean, we've been in business for 15 years. We tried every business model, wholesale. We had a direct sales channel. We opened up a shop at the Wynn Hotel in Las Vegas. We did international. We work with distributors. I mean, we tried everything. Wow. And when something wouldn't work, we would cut the leg off to save the body and switch gears and pivot. And now what we've done with that business is license the brand to a great company. 90% of our business is now in the Middle East, which is crazy. Like what's under the burqa is booty parlor. And so now that business is hands off. We take a royalty, which is great. And that has allowed me to transition the business into the licensing model. That's really allowed me to do what I really love, which is coaching women, writing books. I've written 2 books on women and sex. My last book was about motherhood and the identity crisis we go through and the loss of libido and all those challenges. And I do digital courses for moms. And so I'm able to, you know, I've had this kind of long and winding career within this overarching space of sexual wellness and female empowerment. And where I'm at now is like, I want to keep changing. Like the desire to keep changing, I've achieved a certain amount of success in many different areas of my career. And now I just want to keep changing and doing new things, which is really interesting. Nobody really tells you that when you're growing up, building your career. But I really like, I'm just like, what's next? What else can I do? How else can I help women? How else can I serve women? How else can I help women feel more, you know, orgasmic? I come back to that word. How else can women feel more orgasmic? That's what I want. That's what I want to do with every day.
Oh, you know, it's been my experience. I was interacting with a group of women recently. And they all had this, and these were, And I was like twice their age too. So maybe they just haven't discovered it or like older than them. And they were like, they were uncomfortable with their pussy. They were uncomfortable with the word pussy. They were uncomfortable with oral sex. They were uncomfortable with orgasm. And I'm like, I need to send y'all to somebody. Because clearly they just did not understand their power and not understand their pleasure. And I'm just like looking at them. I mean, because I'm a lot like you, Dana, that from a very young age, I was very aware of my sexuality and I've never been afraid of it. And, you know, in all my divorces, the sex was never the problem. Like, you know, and I just, what would you say is a first step for these women out there that just have a bad relationship with their own sexuality?
Well, that's a big question, but I think, you know, where you start is by like listening and trying to hear what your pussy's telling you. Like, what's she telling you? That she's scared, that she doesn't know, that she's still processing trauma, that she learned to be embarrassed about, you know, how she looks, how she smells, how she tastes. Is it maybe it's not your pussy that's blocked. Maybe it's your voice. Maybe you're afraid to communicate. Like, so really the baseline is to pause and say, where am I stuck? Where am I not actually connected with my energy centers? And the two big ones for women are often our pussies, our root chakra, and our voices, our throat chakra. Mm. And of course those are so connected, right? So getting in touch and saying, okay, where am I blocked? What's blocking me? What did I learn? What's the negative belief that I've carried with me? Who did I learn it from? Where did I learn it? Do I still believe it's true that masturbation is dirty, or that I should wait till I'm married, or that bad girls have a lot of sex? Like, what did you learn? And is it still true? Usually there's that inkling of, no, it's not still true. That's not true. As a grown woman, even if I'm in my 20s, I think that's not true. And so then the next question to ask yourself is like, okay, am I capable of rewriting that belief? Not, I'm going to rewrite that belief and do affirmations every day and I'm going to fix it in a second. No, but like baby stepping your way. Am I capable of rewriting that belief? Hell yeah, I am. And then you start rewrite. Okay, what do I actually want to feel? I want to feel connected to my sexuality. I want to feel confident and courageous to express my desires. Oh, wait, maybe I don't even know what my desires are. Okay, so maybe I need to do a little bit of work around that. So there's layers and layers, but if you give yourself permission to sort of start peeling back those layers and exploring yourself in that way, it's a pathway to becoming whole, right?
Would you agree that a big part of that is your own self-worth?
Oh God, yeah. Oh God.
Because I think a big part of that is not self-esteem and confidence, but self-worth. Because when you don't realize, I mean, this, Rachel and I are big into talking about therapy. I mean, this came up in a therapy session when I started going back like over a year ago. And she said, I know you're confident, but you have a self-worth issue. I'm like, no, I don't. I am good. I love myself. She's like, nope, you have a self-worth issue. And we dove through it. And I think as women, we try to push through like we're superstars and rock stars, but there are a portion of us who forget to self-love, not just self-love by self-loving our pussies, but by really valuing who we are so that we listen to our voices. I'm thinking as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about in my 20s and just like the two of you, always aware of my sexuality at a very early age. Then you go through different phases, like in my 20s. Was I considered maybe a little wild because I was really exploring myself in my 20s? What did people think of me? Right? Like that kind of stuff. And then you start going like, well, I don't want people to think I'm a whore. So I shouldn't do things like that. I should be a good girl. And so I think there's like this weird kind of roller coaster that some women go through that is impacted by self-worth.
100%. And what you just said, I was literally like, check, 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 because I went back to therapy about a year ago. after having a long break and uncovered a bunch of self-worth issues. Mm-hmm. Like, are you kidding me? I have evolved. I've grown. I've done so much self-worth. I'm like the yep. queen of self-love and connection yep. with my sexuality and my body. I love every dimple, every lump. But there was this underlying, snagging, leftover self-worth garbage mm-hmm. that had come up as I was turning 44 and was like, hey, you haven't sorted this part out yet.
Yep.
Let's dig in. Am I worthy of abundance? Am I worthy of doing what I want? Am I worthy to actually express myself, you know, if I don't have as many followers as someone else? Like, all these things came right up at me. And yeah, you have, I mean, look, being worthy of pleasure was never my issue, but that is a huge block for so many. Am I worthy if I'm not classically beautiful? Am I worthy if I'm not skinny? Am I worthy if, you know, I don't dress a certain way? Am I worthy if I
say the word fuck all the time in podcasts? Yeah,
or if I had a trauma, if I was hurt, like, and for sadly, for so many women, having some kind of trauma around their sexuality, even if it's not like the classic, you know, violence that, you know, we often see in film and TV. A lot of women carry embarrassment and shame and trauma around this area of their lives. And if that's not processed, if you can't forgive yourself, if you can't move through the shame and alchemize that embarrassment or shame mm-hmm. or whatever that moment was, then you build a wall against it, right? And you don't feel worthy to have it. So yeah, that's a big one.
And you might be shocked at what you find, like in some therapy. I have scenarios going back to like being a small child on the school bus. Like, this is like the craziest story. And it's one reason I won't put my kid on the school bus. But I was on the school bus and I used to journal from a really young age, and I would doodle and I would draw. And a friend of mine told me a story about going to a concert and being stuck in a line of traffic. And this man got out and like urinated on the side of the road. And it was like, this thing when we were kids, like, so I was like sketching, doodling a picture of this man like peeing, and some of the kids on the bus told the bus driver, and then there was this big to do on the bus about me and my deviant behavior drawing in my dream. It was like this huge deal, and I have so much trauma surrounded by the school bus and some other things that happened on the school bus. Yeah. Like, and I was young. Yeah. And, you know, thankfully I'm still really in touch with my sexuality due to a lot of shame, like shame mm-hmm. being put on me for it. But I think that you're onto something. There's a lot of that. And, let's shift to motherhood too, because there's a lot of shame of like, I'm not worthy because I'm not the perfect mom and my kid eats avocado and sweet potatoes. Yeah. And no, I have some, like, my body is not perfect since my baby, and let's blame the baby for my body. Like, let's talk about motherhood.
Yeah. Motherhood. Good God. You know, my kids are, it's such a big cauldron of things. It's a big soup. Yeah, my kids are almost 7 and almost 10. And I am, okay, I'm just going to tell a story and we're going to see where it goes.
Perfect. We love stories.
So when I was pregnant with my first, I was like, before I got pregnant, I always thought, oh, epidural, give me the drug, knock me out. I don't want to breastfeed, blah, blah, blah. And then I got pregnant. I was like, I am magical. This is what I was meant to do. I want to breastfeed. I want a home birth. I want everything natural. And I had some complications. I wasn't able to birth at home, but I was able to have a vaginal birth with no epidural. So I felt really empowered. And then I was like, I'm going to encapsulate my placenta and I'm going to eat it. And it's going to make me strong. And my husband was like, oh, okay. You sure about that? And I was like, yeah. So, you know, the doula gets the placenta and she I mean, it's disgusting. She dehydrates it. She makes it. She cooks it. She makes it into pills. And I take the pills and they fill me with rage. They fill me with rage. Rage. Like, and granted, in the newborn phase, you're full of hormones, so you're going through a lot of things. But I was like the Hulk after I would take these pills. I was filled with rage. And I never actually thought, like, what did that mean on an underlying level? And the other night I was talking about it with a group of women that I connect with. And they said, well, what do you think that actually meant? And I swear to God, I was like, oh, how naive have I been? Like, motherhood is full of gains, but it is also full of losses. And I think that rage was some, my body somehow processing the loss of self as I knew it. And I had like deep, deep stuff, right? Like, you know, motherhood, it's my greatest joy and it's my biggest challenge.
Girl, wait till you get past 11. Holy terrifying, shit, balls.
Terrifying, terrifying, terrifying. But it's like, I feel like it's that constant dance between giving and pausing to take and receive, right? It's like all the sacrifice that you make to clothe them, feed them, nurture them, comfort them, enjoy them, like step away from what you want to do to be with them. And then also like finding the path to your own pleasure in motherhood, finding the path to your own identity, your new identity. It's like they say, when a child is born, a mother is born. And that's so true. Apparently I felt quite rageful about that. Yeah, I think we get stuck. I think we get stuck. I call it the mom zone. I remember, you know, washing bottles and being so focused on the bottles. It was my job now, you know. I was going to wash these bottles and sterilize these bottles and make sure they were amazing. And my husband came in the kitchen. He was like, do you want to go outside and look at the stars with me? And I was like, oh, I'm washing bottles. And then that was where I was like, oh, wait, I've gone off the deep end. And that's when I realized this phenomenon of the mom zone, right? We get stuck in the mom zone, blinders on, all about the kids, all about sort of perfection and comparison. You know, well, her kid's eating this. Oh, I must do better because that must be the gold standard. Like you said, if her kid's eating sweet potatoes and avocado, I must do better because that's a reflection upon me. But it's not. I think we got it wrong there.
Hey, Warners, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you haven't already hopped over to iTunes to give us a review, please do so. Yes, I'm actually begging, because you know what? If you give us a review, it takes like 30 seconds. It really helps more people find what we have to say. And if you're listening to this right now, you think what we have to say is valuable. So let's spread the love. Give us a review. Please, pretty please. Now back to the show.
I just had this flash, and I'm not a mom. Dog mom, but not a mom mom. You're doing this comparison as moms to other moms and the things that they're doing. Are there conversations amongst the moms that sound more like, man, last night when we had sex, what I did to him was like, are those comparisons happening with moms?
So
I wish.
Well, no, but do you see where I'm going with this?
I do. It's very insightful that you brought that up, because there's a lot of shame in what happens when you lose your libido. And someone says, well, how often are you guys having sex? And you go, well, how often are you having sex? You want them to answer first so that you make sure your number matches theirs, because you don't want to feel like you're failing in yet another area of motherhood. And that's like, it's just too much pressure, right?
Could you imagine if you all were just like, even if it wasn't, if you were just making shit up to like one up each other? Like, man, let me tell you how many times I made him orgasm last
then
night.
Then suddenly we'd be men.
Yeah. But at the same time, I feel like the sex becomes this like, especially in the first few years, you know, it's like, oh, you know, that's the reaction that all moms have to it in the first few years. You're just too tired. You're touched out. You don't feel like you have anything left to give. You're like annoyed with your husband. Resentment has crept in because you feel like you're taking on more and maybe you're not communicating your needs and blah, blah, blah. So you forget like the joy of sex. You forget that sex with yourself and with your partner that it can actually be the rocket fuel that powers you through the marathon of motherhood and parenting. So it's like it's a double-edged sword. You don't want it, but you've also forgotten that it can be really helpful to you.
Kind of like working out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good analogy. Yeah. Yeah. But no, women aren't often comparing like how many BJs they gave their partner once you have kids. They're like, oh, I had to. I'm like, come on. You get to give a gift of pleasure, you know, and then you get to feel really confident that you like rocked his world. That's a hard shift for many moms. It's a hard shift. Yeah.
I'm not sure I've had any kind of conversations like that with moms, because I don't know. I feel like that people are like, whenever, because I love to talk about sex. Let's talk about boobs. Let's talk about butts. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about pussy. Let's talk about penises, like all the fun things. And I swear, like, my circle of people's like,
yeah,
whoa, girl.
Let's talk about reverse cowboy.
Can you go get some therapy? And I'm like, well, wait a minute. Yeah. It is therapy. Like, it's such a fun subject. And I think people, they are afraid of it because they don't understand it. Like,
we also live in a very puritanical society.
Yeah. And I grew up with, I had a great family, but we never really, sex was like something that Rachel was interested in and everybody needs to not talk about. Mm. And I have had such explicit conversations with my daughter because she asked, and I want her to ask me anything. I want her to feel like this subject is not taboo. I want her to not be afraid of it. I want to feel her to feel empowered about her own body so that no one takes advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And we had this conversation where in Stranger Things, the mom gets pissed at the teenage daughter because she thinks that she had sex, mm-hmm. right? That's typical. You had sex, you dirty little whore, whatever, you know? And I'm like, oh no, I would love it if the first night that you have sex, you come home and we talk about it. And you say, this part was a little weird, or like, I don't know if I did this right, or if I didn't like when he did this, you know, like to me, the greatest evolution of mom and daughter moment. If we could have that conversation so I can go, okay, so I totally know what you mean. Next time, tell them you want this, or tell them what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Or tell them that you don't like this.
No one teaches us that.
No.
Not at the beginning of experiencing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's exactly the kind of education that we need. And thankfully, you know, there are so many more resources now for parents, you know, to parent in a sex positive way and to open those conversations and to ask a lot of questions. So it invites conversation. There's so many more resources than there used to be. And yet it can bring up a lot for mom.
And then there's a whole nother world out there that I wasn't ready for, which is like when I was young, the kids didn't have the option of going, it just wasn't there of like, maybe I'm pansexual, maybe I'm this. So I'm like, it's a really interesting world to be, you know, like one of my daughter's friends decided she's bisexual. I mean, they were talking 11 and the parents are just horrified and they punish her for it. And I'm like, well, it sounds like an exploration thing to me. And, you know, I'm all for that. Like, I just want my kid to know I support her in whatever she's doing, as long as she knows what's, you know, safe for her.
Yeah. 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 She's lucky to have you.
Yes. Most of the time.
Right. I know. Well, look, here's the thing. The other thing is that, you know, like, if I yell or scream or say something that I shouldn't, I always go back and apologize. Right. And I always see, like, I'm always kind of glad when I mess up, because it's an opportunity to model what apologizing looks like in a real relationship. And I think a lot of moms think, oh, I have to be perfect. I have to, you know, never lose my temper. I have to be all sort of giving and accommodating, but that's not a real relationship. A real relationship is two ways. There's fighting, there's ups and downs, and thinking about your relationship with your children in that way takes a lot of pressure off. And I like that.
Mm. Coming back to moms and their sexuality, what would you say to moms who feel like they've lost themselves a little bit? I mean, you were talking a little bit about that, that they get so, and I remember this, and I remember really having a conversation with myself, like, bring yourself back, Rachel, because you get lost in that, you know, this is my purpose to take care of this child now. And oh no, my needs aren't important. And you can actually see what moms kind of shrivel up and fade away because they feel like that's what they need to do to identify themselves rather than be your best self to model for your children.
Yeah.
How to be your best self.
Yeah. I mean, I think, look, it's very easy and very normal to lose yourself in motherhood. You know, you may have left a career and then, you know, dive very deep into motherhood. And then a few years later be like, well, I want to do something, but you may not want to go back to what you were doing. And that can be very confusing. And then you go, well, what should I do with myself? Maybe, you know, and it's like, what am I capable of? And so it sort of plays to all of our insecurities. And I guess the thing, like from a professional, or even from an interest standpoint, from a personal interest standpoint, is when you hit that moment where you're like, yeah, I'm ready to do something, is to allow yourself like an exploratory phase. Okay, well, what do I actually want to do? I think a lot of us feel like, well, if I'm going to take time away from my kids, I better know exactly what I'm going to do and have a plan and get right to it. But allow yourself some time to kind of explore, maybe study something new that you're interested in, or take a training, or even if it's just a hobby that you want to do, like give yourself permission. I love the phrase permission to ditch. I always give myself permission to ditch certain things in order to free up time to explore myself. So, do the floors absolutely have to be done every day? No. Can the grocery shopping wait another day? Yes. Can I put off the bills or the bookkeeping for another day? Yeah, maybe, sure. Like, what absolutely has to be done today and what doesn't have to be done today to afford me the time to explore what my desires are. What do I desire to do as a woman who also happens to be a mother, right? And even just spending time journaling on that question can feel very empowering and very freeing and allow you to tap into your creativity to figure out, okay, what do I want to do? What's possible for me? That's another great question. What's possible for me? Like, that is just a big, wide open, beautiful question that allows you to feel like your world is bigger than just your to-do list for the day in the home with the kids.
You know, Rachel and I are both big on the journaling and meditation and thinking through things. And you do a lot of writing and a lot of blogging. And you, one of your most recent articles, The 6 Mojo Blocks Standing in the Way of Your Satisfaction.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, these blocks have been sort of the building blocks, the foundation of the last many years of work that I've done. With my last book, The Mommy Mojo Makeover, and my course, The Satisfied Mama, it's like in all my work with women and workshops and coaching, you know, I sort of identified the main blocks that keep women and mothers from feeling like the most confident, alive, and satisfied version of themselves. And so, yeah, the first one I always talk about is like your lack of body confidence or your disconnection to your body or the loss of respect for your body. Like, it's one thing to look in the mirror and be like, yeah, I love my tits. One's up here and one's down there. I love my ass. It's so dimply. Like, you'll get there, but you don't need to start there. Like, standing in the mirror and simply saying, I respect you. I respect you breasts. I respect you shoulders. I respect you belly. Like, that's a good place to start. But if you're walking around all day with what I call negative body banter, the things we like hear, ugh, thighs, you're so big. Ugh, where did that come from? Ugh, pinching and poking yourself, that icking ourselves. That is a stink that permeates into every other area of your life. People can smell that for miles and it doesn't feel good for you. And it's not going to attract the other kinds of wins that you want in your life, right? So that's a huge block, is like not loving your body, not being at peace with your body, not respecting your body.
Yeah. And acceptance of where you are. Like that's one thing that it's been a life's work for me as a dancer and being through all this eating disorders and the body confidence issues and everything. But I was reminded by my coach the other day, the body is actually really cool. It's like Play-Doh. Like you can shape it and change it. And like, and sometimes in motherhood, it stretches and it like is a superpower. But like you said, there's that ickiness rather than like, okay, my body is, I am accepting my body how it is right now because it's a result of this amazing process I just went through of creating a new life. Yeah. And if I'm not pleased in it, let's enjoy the journey to get where I feel better about it. Like there's a whole, but it's like, you got to accept where you are and move where you want to be. But
And I think for women listening who are not moms,
same deal,
who have not gone through that body change. So I will speak for those women. There are other reasons why our bodies change other than kids, right? It's like
totally
the emotional trauma that you go through something, through the loss of something, through a change. They're like, right, because we might eat for comfort or something happens to you and you end up in the hospital and you physically can't work out anymore. So there are other things that create us to lose our body and to have this ick. And at the same time, you know, you look at someone like Rachel who is like fiercely in shape and beautiful body wise. But just because I say that doesn't mean she feels that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. So then we get into major comparison mode.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is so much about finding your own right relationship with your body. You know, I turned 44 and you know, the cracks are starting to happen, you know, and, you know, things are shifting and moving. And there was one day where I was just like, the cracks are where the wisdom is coming through, right? It's like tapping into the different perspective of, you know, the mother archetype and the crone archetype. It's like, you can't be a wise woman if you don't have any cracks on your face. So it's always about how can I find the right relationship? How can I find that new perspective?
Well, it comes down to mindset.
Totally. Totally. I feel like you could spend your whole day doing mindset work and then get nothing else done. But maybe everything would get done. I don't know. Like, who knows?
I think that's a big piece of it.
Yeah, it is a big piece of it. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a big block. And I think that's a block for mothers or women who have not had children, no matter what. I think just for women, our relationship with our body and how we allow our feelings about our body to influence our feelings about ourself and our worth at large. It's, you know, we're like, F the patriarchy for that one. Okay. Like, fuck you, patriarchy, for putting so much, you know, weight on our weight.
Like, and you're a business owner and an entrepreneur. How do you think that shows up for women in business, whether or not they own a business, but how they show up in their professional lives?
The patriarchy or our body image?
The body image. And the patriarchy.
I mean, look, I think that, you know, what I always say is like, if I feel, if I have respect for my body in the mirror, I'm going to have respect for my body in a business meeting. If I can stand confidently in my body and not be icking myself, I'm going to have more confidence when I'm pitching my products. Like for me, it's very much, all related. If I am uncomfortable in my body, and look, I have very uncomfortable days as well. I gained 15 pounds in the last few months because of quarantine. But again, mindset wise, I go, oh, wow, you know, good for you for coping with this incredible life stress. Like, yeah, Ritz crackers, like, thank you. Thank you for helping me cope.
Thank you for helping me not kill anyone.
Thank God for Justin's dark chocolate peanut butter cups, like on mass now. Like, thank you for giving me that comfort. But if I'm feeling uncomfortable, then I'm going to feel uncomfortable in my clothes. I'm going to feel like I'm hiding. I'm going to feel my energy is not going to be as embodied when I'm in a room giving a talk or on, you know, a Zoom doing a podcast. So again, it's all about being in right relationship at that moment. And I love this concept of at that moment because life is always changing, right? And that kind of parlays into another block, if we can, which is having having a breakdown in your communication, right? Certainly, when you become a mother, when you become parents, there can be a lot of stress in your relationship, a lot of change. You might not know how to process it. If you don't already have really great open communication, that communication is probably going to get worse because you guys both have new needs that are not being expressed. Your sex drives are going to be probably out of whack. And so when I talk to women and couples about, well, how do you talk about your sex life and how can you open that conversation in a productive way instead of in a blaming way? Well, you never want it. Well, you always want it, right? That's the conversation that a lot of couples wind up having. Focusing on the lack, focusing on the problems. Like, how do you shift that conversation? And I am going to bring this all together to this in the moment right now part that I just mentioned, which is to sit down and have a conversation that's like, what's great about our sex life? Even if it's in the pits, you can still find one thing that's great. And what could be better, right? Always say what's great and not but, right? Because but negates what you just said about what's positive. So what's great and what could be better? And how can we co-create a sex life that feels exciting and compassionate for where we are right now? Because right now, in the middle of a pandemic, when your libido got all shriveled up because fear and anxiety don't really promote a healthy libido, okay, in a few months, let's have this question again. How do we co-create this sex life that feels exciting and compassionate right now? And when you're constantly asking that question of right now, you give yourself space and creativity and an understanding that your sex life and your relationship are going to have an ebb and flow. And that takes a lot of the pressure off. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. I have a new business idea to launch. This is
I knew you would.
Improv for sex. It's all about the yes and heightening things in the moment.
Yeah. And you know, while you were talking, Dane, I was thinking about when I had my daughter, Roxy, and I, you know, guys are not, when we have a baby, like the guy doesn't stop wanting to have sex as much as he wants. Like he doesn't even know how to ask. He's like, oh God, I better not ask her. She just had a baby out of that vagina. Like, what are we, I really want to fuck somebody. Like, you know, they still are having that feeling. And like, I remember I just wanted somebody to hold me and comfort me so bad. And unfortunately I didn't have that kind of thing going on with Roxy's dad, but like just to comfort me. And I think in today's pandemic too, like we are all so stressed out and confused and like that comfort of just like hug me and stroke me and comfort me. And that can, and it probably always, that connection leads to more. It might lead to a sexual experience. It might lead to just everybody feeling better.
Yeah. But it starts with asking for the comfort. I know through the pandemic, the stress, I've asked for the comfort. I've asked for the just hug me.
Yeah. And what I love about that, and thank you for bringing that up, is because it's so much about intimacy, right? And acknowledging your own needs and you know, knowing that your needs may be different from your partner's and having a spirit of collaboration, right? So if you can come together and ask that question, like, how do we co-create this thing between us right now? Well, here's what I need. I just need like comfort, intimacy, maybe a massage, maybe if you'd hold me, maybe if you'd make me dinner. what do you need? Well, I need a blowjob, he might say. And so that's okay to be able to have that, those, that difference, to be able to give and say, you know what? I don't need to receive right now. I'm happy to give. Men kind of have a hard time understanding that, well, I want to give to you too, you know? But it's okay. It's okay for things to be quote unquote lopsided as long as you're both in tune with what your needs are and expressing them and being able to meet in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, totally. Because I know there's probably guys out there that would be, they want to say, you know what? I need a blowjob. But they're probably terrified because the response that they get from the woman might be, oh God. Huh. But that's because she hasn't possibly, I'm just making this up as I go along, but possibly she is frustrated because she doesn't know how to ask what she wants.
That's right.
You know, I just need you to stroke my hair. I just need you to give me an orgasm. I just need you to leave me the fuck alone. Like, I mean, whatever that may be.
It goes back to the whole improv concept of yes and, meaning, yes, I'm going to listen to you and accept what you're saying. It doesn't mean I'm going to necessarily agree that I want to give you a blowjob tonight. I'm going to eliminate the butt and listen to it as long as you're going to listen to me. And to your point, Dana, is then co-create from there. How do we get to a place where we both feel like our attentions are being met?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so look, like if you don't want to, you know, if you're not in the mood to give a blowjob, like don't let the conversation stop there. It could be like, okay, well, I could watch you masturbate, you know, and like, I'll take my top off. Like, hey, how does that sound? You know, it's like, I'm not saying negotiate in a transactional way, but keep exploring because that promotes creativity, that promotes connection, that promotes intimacy, that promotes communication. And then suddenly both of your needs are being met and there's less resentment.
Or how about just further conversation about what makes you want to resist those things?
Yeah.
Totally. Why do you not want to give a blowjob?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm here to tell you, there was this hilarious video and I wish I could find it. It's the funniest thing. It's this woman and she's like, you know, I'm not really a feminist. I've just decided that, you know, the quickest way for me to get the remote control and watch what I want is just give him a fucking blowjob. Just be done with it. Just do it. It was the funniest freaking thing. It was so funny.
It's a handy tool, but I enjoy it. For me, I write about what I call it, your sexual superpower, right? And it's a way to boost your confidence is to actually look and say, what am I good at? What's my sexual superpower that's a turn on to my partner? Is it a maneuver? Is it a look? Is it how I hold myself? Is it how I receive? And tuning into that, like how often do we actually tune into that as a source of confidence? We're always like, well, I'm a great cook. I'm great at business. I'm great at this. I'm great at that. But like, that's another area of our beings, of ourself, of our wholeness that we can look at to boost our self-confidence.
And you can also utilize like the love language of your partner to use your superpower to that advantage. Like, you know, maybe your partner's love language is words of affirmation, and maybe they will just go bananas crazy if you text them some hot text messages during the day. Like if you just, you know, start thinking about how to make it exciting and fun.
Totally.
I think that a lot of times, like when I became a mom, I thought, like you said, Dana, that it should be the same as before. And I kind of lost something of what I was when I was younger, which I did. I gained maturity a little bit. But like, it doesn't have to be the same. It can actually be even better, just like leveled up, a new type of thing.
But I wish that someone had told me, like, you're going to go through an identity crisis. I feel like nobody told me that. They were like, here's how you swaddle, you know? And I really just would have appreciated had someone told me, like, it's going to take you some time to grow into who you are next. I feel like nobody mentioned that to me.
They don't. They're like, it's so beautiful.
And before we wrap up this amazing time with you, how do you think some of this shows up in the workplace? The combination of sexuality, but also the new mom life. right? When you go back to work or you go back to running your business, I have to imagine that there's a change in that as well. The mom piece or just dealing with sexuality in general in the workplace. I know it's a double question, so I apologize for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You know, I haven't been in the, you know, traditional workplace for 15 years. And so now, you know, with the last few years of Me Too, I think that I think things are still netting out with what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, what was considered okay, and then swinging right to the other side of the spectrum, right? There's gray area in sexuality, right? There's a lot of gray area. And that is going to bleed, or, you know, our sexuality is going to bleed over into power dynamics in the workplace. That is undeniable. I think that a lot of women have had to play down their sexuality, their sexual empowerment, their innate kind of juiciness to be respected on, you know, the same level as a man. And I think that's a crying shame, because I think we should be able to harness our juiciness and use that in business. And I think that as entrepreneurs, we can, but in a more traditional work setting, I don't think we're probably there yet. I think that what needs to happen is more on a policy level. Like, we shouldn't be saying to women, you have to worry about how juicy you are. Like, what we need to be saying is women should be getting paid the same amount as men, right? Like, on a policy level, that's where we need things to change.
And just because she's juicy doesn't mean you can drink it.
That's right. Thank you. That's right. But I think things would feel a lot different if there were more women in power, if there were more female CEOs, if there were more funds investing in women. And things are changing. Things are definitely changing. But that's a loaded question. It's a complicated question. I don't have like an amazing little soundbite for you, because it's so
great. That's another episode.
That's a whole other episode. I'm going to write some notes for that one.
And I'll just leave you with one thing to think about for the next time we talk. And then Rachel's got a couple more questions for you. You know, you said it's a little bit different as entrepreneurs than a traditional workplace. And one thing I have found as an entrepreneur and as a business owner is there's actually some complications with it, where I have been put in some awkward and compromising situations with clients who have expressed other things that they want that is not specifically written in the contract.
Yeah.
And then as the business owner and your job is to generate revenue, it becomes a very, I'm like, where's HR? Oh, that's me.
Yeah. It's so gray. And it's so hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years of power dynamics, you know, that we are now trying to unpack and navigate. And it's so complicated. Because it's also human nature, right? People want to fuck.
Yeah.
But it's just complicated. It's so complicated. I mean, but that doesn't mean that, you know, you want to receive those invitations. It's like, you know, I have some younger single friends who are like, I get so many dick pics in my DMs every day. And I'm like,
okay, for the record, I've never gotten a fucking dick pic in my life, and I'm offended.
Oh, you need a dick pic. Tell your husband to send you one.
Me either. Well, I've never gotten one. And I'm like,
that whole wave,
I really missed it. And I'm sort of grateful for it. But it's like, you know, the tone and the rules are constantly shifting. I think we have a long way to go. I think we still have a long way to go to level out those power dynamics that are pretty innate to our society for the last forever, basically.
That is saying a mouthful, Dana. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, before we let you go, I have to shift into our final signature questions, and we will try to get you back so we can talk about all of that and more. Number one, how do you define sexy?
Ooh, I think, you know, sexy is when you're feeling yourself. It's like when you're in tune with your desires and you know what you want and you've got a lust for life and you're not afraid to express it. That's sexy.
Love it. And what's the best advice that you've ever been given?
Oh my God. Oh, Jesus. Okay, I'm going to go with something new that I was given by a teacher of mine whose name is Sarah Durham Wilson, and she teaches on the maiden to mother archetypal journey and the journey of sort of ushering in the mature feminine. And when she talks about the maiden archetype runs and reaches, she strives, right? She's looking for external praise and acknowledgement. And the mother, she doesn't have to run and reach. She simply roots and is. And for me, that advice of stop running and reaching and simply root and be, to me, that advice really helped me shift into a much calmer and more grounded place of ownership and embodiment of where I'm at in my life right now.
Boom. And last question, aside from some of the great tidbits you've given us up till now, what is the advice that you wish you had been given?
What's the advice that I wish? That it is okay to release the struggle. I've got this whole like attachment to struggle. And if you're struggling, it must mean you're working hard. And if you're working hard, that means you're valuable. But I think that made me a workaholic. And that pattern made me too attached to financial success as being the main indicator of my self-worth. Because once I got financial success and I still didn't feel worthy, I was like, wait, huh? What? I thought that was supposed to equate to the thing. So I wish someone had said, do enough. You're worthy no matter how successful you are, whether you are or you aren't. And just give up the struggle. Like the only way to win the race is to get out of the race. That's another thing that Sarah Durham Wilson told me. Like the only way to win the race is to get out of the race. And I was like, oh my God. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Yes. So that's that.
Oh, yes. Dana, thank you so much for all of the truth nuggets that you have dropped on us today. I would love to have you back. I'm sure Gina would agree.
I love you guys.
So just wonderful, wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you again so much, Dana. For our listeners, for our Warners to get connected to you, learn more about you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Definitely check out my website, danabmyers.com, or come join me on Instagram at danamyersxoxo. It's where I'm posting like my content, my programs, my online retreats that I'm hosting and all the things. Yeah.
Awesome. All the things, Warners. You want to check that out? We'll put that in the show notes. Dana, we want to thank you one more time for joining us today. It was so much fun with you and explosive like orgasms.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
And Warners, thank you for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About. To learn more about our show and everything you need to know about me and Rachel and Keith Walters, you can go to womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com, and you can also check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/Warners. And for me, particularly if you want to know more, you can go straight to ginatremarco.com. And for Rachel,
yes, just go over to womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com because I'm always in metamorphosis and currently so. And also, one of the best compliments that you can give Gina and I and our show is to share an episode with a friend. So if you got some truth nuggets out of this episode, please feel free to share it with your closest friend or 100 friends.
Yes. Awesome. Well, we got to go. So bye, Dana. Bye, Rachel. Bye, Warners.
Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Woman Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof, monkey, monkey.